The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation.
WTBQ. Hi, good morning. This is Sandy Cassese calling. Actually, I'm in the studio. I am not calling. I am sitting here with headset on, speaking into the microphone. Just want to say good morning and how delighted I am to be with you today. I kind of got a little ahead of myself because I'm excited about the program that we're going to bring you today. But before we get started with my impeccable guest, I just want to throw a couple things out to you in the audience today. And I'll start by saying, as you know, not-for-profits have to do fundraising, and we are in that category. Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties is holding its annual gala on Saturday, April 20th, 2024, at West Hills Country Club in Middletown. And every year when we do the gala, we make sure that we honor members of our community who have gone above and beyond and really have helped to participate in promoting hospice services and ensuring that the services that we provide are available to everyone. So this year, I am very pleased to announce that we will be honoring Dr. Susan Jensen and Horizon Family Medical Group, as well as Mr. Michael Gilfeather and Orange Bank and Trust Company. So lots of ways that you can support us. I'm going to direct you to our website, hospiceoforange.com. Hopefully you'll purchase a sponsorship or tickets. You can place an advertisement, make a donation, or you can, you know, participate in our 50-50 raffle or donate to our silent auction. So that was the commercial for our gala, and I'll be talking about that more next month as we get closer. Meanwhile, I am very excited to bring back my very special guest who has been with us a couple of times. She's got a lot to say that's really important, and she's somebody whose opinion I value incredibly. In fact, I lean on her heavily in my day-to-day work as the CEO of this great organization. So let me introduce you and welcome to Kim Warner. Kim, are you on the line?
I am. Hello.
Hi, good morning. It is so good to have you back on the program. You and I have been working really hard together for some years now, and hopefully, as we do this program together, we are dispelling many of the myths that are associated with hospice care and really shedding light on what exactly hospice care provides to those in our community. So I'm going to switch things up a little bit today, and I'd actually like to interview you, Kim, as the Director of Social Work and Bereavement Services. And so I'm going to ask you some questions, and I know that you will answer them authentically, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Very good. I'm ready.
All right. Here we go. Rapid fire. So you've been working in the hospice field for a long time. In fact, I think, you know, I go back with you many, many years, even before I got to Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. As a social worker, what propelled you to decide on a career in hospice?
Oh, boy. Okay. So I think that the work that our like social workers do in general, work towards helping people who need help, and there aren't enough people to do that. And so in hospice, people in our society tend to pull away from someone who's quite ill, don't know what to say, awkwardness about it. If there's a new death in the family, people are really not sure how to manage supporting those whom they care about. And my tendency is to lean into that, to try to find ways, effective ways, to really to support people who need our help the most, who need to feel supported in the most important time. And so I always use an analogy, as I feel like hospice is a hammock underneath a patient and family who are trying very hard to live through a trial. And it is our team who helps lift them up and helps them get through it.
So I am not going to soon forget that hammock analogy. I think it's actually outstanding. And what I heard from you, the two words that I heard that really speak to me and the work that you do and you know, with the team that you lead, are those words, leaning in. And I think it's really important for people to understand that The role of the social worker is largely misunderstood. At least it has been in my experience. There's some crazy stereotypes out there, but we're gonna fix that today, you and I. So let me ask you another question. You've been at the helm for social work for our hospice for how many years now?
About 8 years.
All right. So I think I go back closer to like 19 years with you, with all of your experience in hospice. And I think it's important for people to understand the value that you bring. Social work is one of the core disciplines in hospice. It's just so incredibly different to me from how the public generally perceives the role of a social worker. And I think that, you know, if I were to try to describe to people how you work, I would say it's from a number of ethical principles that guide you and guide your team. And I've been the lucky recipient of your work. So can you talk to the listeners about those ethical principles that guide you?
Of course. The National Association of Social Work start this training in all of us as we go through our master's degree. There are six primary ethical principles that are highlighted in our education. There's one I'll want to highlight, but let me just list the six. It's service, social justice, dignity and worth of the person, integrity, and competence. And I think in hospice work, the value that is most rises to the top is the dignity and worth of the person. It is our job as social workers to respect the inherent person whom we're caring about, to respectful them, to be mindful of their individual differences and their culture and their ethnic diversity, that in hospice, it is driven by the patient. It's called the patient plan of care. So self-determination is one of the highest things our social worker can preserve through the time on hospice.
You know, you said, again, here I'm going to pick a word that you highlighted that I would like to stress, and that word was respect. Interesting to me, this morning I was looking at my LinkedIn profile and some of the posts that were on there this morning, and respect is a really recurrent theme in healthcare, and I have seen, you know, firsthand in the work that I have done with you, just how important that is to the entire disciplinary team. And I think that some of the other disciplines, quite frankly, could take a lesson from social work around integrity and dignity and social justice and truly the importance of human relationships. So I want to thank you for that. And I think it goes a long way, hopefully, to help dispel some of the misconceptions that the public has around the social worker role. So let's talk about that a little bit. What would you say kind of strikes you as a misconception or some misconceptions?
Well, I think it's the opposite of what we just spoke of. There are many times when a social worker will introduce themselves and there's predetermined perceptions that we're going to intrude, we're going to tell them what to do, we're going to inspect their house because we walk in, or we're going to fix that family problem or the financial problem and make it all better. The truth is that we hear what they have to say, we listen carefully to what their hope is, and then we learn what's important to them. We help our team learn that, and whether it's about relationships or how to be the caregiver or linking them to community resources, we really want to assist people through something and not intrude on them and not try to dictate a thing other than advocate for them.
You know, these are very interesting concepts. And if I could boil it down, I would say a lot of what you do is done in an extremely non-judgmental fashion. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a root of the foundation.
Well, that was semester one for me in nursing school, was learning about this particular tenant, and I see it in action every day in your department, and I really respect that, and I want to thank you and on behalf of everyone who avails themselves of our services, because you don't intrude, you don't inspect, you don't dictate, you don't have a fix-it mentality. Exactly the way that you described it is getting to know that person and their particular wishes and allowing them to have the autonomy that they deserve in their last months, to me, is a gift that just, you know, keeps on giving. So thank you for that.
You know, Sandy, it's about the change of hope, not the disbursement of hope. The hope is not lost when someone comes onto our program. Hope is morphed. But one of the things we can highlight as social workers is that there are still things you can hope for. There are still things you have control over. And then we will reinforce and advocate for that.
So I'm just going to tell you, that just gave me the chills, because I think that is the essence of the work that you do. Interesting conversation. Let's pivot a little bit and let's talk about some of the very practical ways that a social worker can help people who are on our program and their caregivers, their loved ones, with this life-threatening condition that they didn't sign up for. How do you create and implement your plan of care, the plan of care that you spoke about before?
Well, I think listening is one of the root things we do when we come and meet someone. It's technically called an assessment, but really what it is to meet someone and learn what's important to them. I often ask, what's the top three concerns you have or priorities you have in your life? How best are we going to help the person who's caring for the ill one to be strong and healthy and resilient? That's what builds our plan of care. We help them through the grief, the changes in roles, the losses of independence, and that's what we focus on.
So the plan of care is not a piece of paper?
Oh, no. Only to the Department of Health.
Interesting, right? Our industry is really challenged these days. We are just in an environment that really needs some meat and potatoes and explanation. So let's talk a little bit about combating misconceptions.
Sure. I think one of the things, often families don't like to talk about unpleasant things. Most people don't. We like to focus on the good and the fun and what's enjoyable. And the truth is that it has a balance. Life has a balance. And if we have someone come on our hospice program, the truth is that they probably will live longer and have better quality of life, which is not the perception out there.
Isn't that the truth? Well, we're about to go to a break, Kim, and when we get back, I'd like to talk to you about something that troubles me, and that's late referrals to our program. And I know that that's something that you are keen on discussing as well.
Hospice of Orange and Sullivan provides a comfort, compassion, and support to help improve the quality of care for those at the end of life. And you can be one of the specially trained volunteers or professionals that makes a difference with those in hospice care and their families. Volunteers are an essential part of the hospice team, filling roles that range from direct contact with patients to providing clerical and fundraising support for the organization. As a hospice volunteer, you'll work alongside the organization's professional, clinical, and administrative staff. Our hospice volunteers describe their work as gratifying, intellectually stimulating, and emotionally meaningful. The hospice staff knows well that their volunteers are essential in bringing quality of life to hospice patients, as well as for the patient's family and friends. Hospice appreciates, respects, and admires those who volunteer to help care for their patients during their greatest time of need. If you've always wanted to make a difference, here is your chance. For more information, visit hospiceoforange.com.
This is attorney Bob Gruhulik of the law firm Beatty & Gruhulik, the lawyer guy. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon for the latest legal advice and tips. We're taking calls and giving answers to all your legal questions. That's every Tuesday at 12 noon on Radio Worth Listening to. WTBQ.
Well, hello, I'm back. It's Sandy Cassese, the CEO of Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. I'm with Kim Warner, who I imagine you are riveted by the conversation that she's providing today. And before the break, we were talking about some of the, you know, the misconceptions and the challenges in the environment that we serve in. So, Kim, this is one that is just incredibly near and dear to my heart, and it's late referrals. And I think this deserves a couple of minutes of conversation. I think that on average, most people underestimate the length of time that someone can take advantage of the hospice service. And of course, one of the ways that we can make our wishes known is through advanced directives. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this topic in particular.
Well, it always breaks my heart when we only have a week or two to help a family, because there's so much more we can do about building the quality of life in families. And the sooner people come to terms with being able to talk about their illness and how it's impacting their life and speak to the ones that are most important to them in their family, then the quicker the time they have to make control over their voice, their choices, and advanced directives is certainly one of them. Deciding who's going to make decisions for you when you're not able is big and important. And it's much easier to make heavy decisions when you're not in the throes of a crisis. So we are big advocates for helping families and patients learn what's important to them. You know, a disease cannot be cured at times. And our job is to help them discern what their choices are, how to help define them, and honor them. Honor those decisions and advocate for them.
Well, I think, again, if I were to pick one word from what you just said, the operative word would be control. Having control over your own decision making, to me, is one of the most precious gifts that we can give to our loved ones. So I know that you and your team work incredibly hard with patients before they get to that point, when we're talking about advanced directives or talking about autonomy. And I congratulate you for that, because it's not always a topic that people want to talk about. So, you know, another thing that I think we probably should touch on is managing expectations, right? Having open and truthful conversations when someone has that serious disease, and how it's not about waiting to die. It's more about making the most of your time. Would you agree?
Oh, I absolutely think that. When those whom we love are faced with losing independence and fearful of the future, courageously speaking with each other brings a family together within a crisis rather than pulls them apart. The social workers offer many opportunities as possible for everyone to talk through this time, the time we have with them, all of the emotions that they're churning, building as many quality moments and days as possible, encouraging those healthy relationship conversations that people, we don't want people to have regrets or woulda, coulda, shoulda thoughts. So we try to make them have as many opportunities to have quality, wonderful times together as a family.
Well, I have seen evidence of that, and I'm just always impressed by the ability of you and your team to show the patients and families that we take care of, the compassion, the respect, and I think really objectivity for those that we're serving. And, you know, it's interesting to me, because pretty much whenever I tell anybody I work for hospice, the very first thing that I'm asked is, how can you do this? It's got to be depressing. I don't see it that way. And I know you don't either. I know that our team sees the work as a privilege. And even though it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, it's very much an uplifting experience at times. So I know that you use all of the communication skills that you have in your toolbox, Kim. I want to focus on one thing that I think is a superpower that our social workers and you have, and that is advocating for patient rights. This one really resonates with me, and I would like you to explore that more with me.
Well, honoring a personhood and their own independent thought and their decision-making is a foundation to what social workers do. Again, listening is one of the most important skills we have. And we want to help people understand that how they make decisions as an adult through their lives doesn't stop when you have a terminal illness. That continues. And the whole hospice foundation and its regulations are all set up to do just that, is to respect what people want and have them be as in control as they can with our respect and our expertise.
Well, I would imagine that you have countless stories of ways that you were able to honor patient rights, to maybe give an intervention with a family that you found or find particularly satisfying. Can you tell us about one or two?
Well, one sticks out to me.
Good.
We had a woman who was at our Kaplan residence. She was a very vibrant grandmother who was highly involved with her children and grandchildren. And she was fighting in a very courageous way her disease. She ended up at our building and was trying very hard to shelter her grandchildren and her adult children from the depths of her illness. And what was happening is that her adult children were pleading with their mother to please give them permission to talk to their children and the families and friends of hers about what she was going through. In respect for her privacy, they had not done that. They needed her permission. And there was a huge conflict between what the patient wanted and her adult children wanted. They asked me to come in. I worked with the family and talked about the values this woman built into her children of being truthful and honest and high in communication in the family, and that her wish to protect herself from privacy was stopping them from honoring those values that they grew up in. And so the work that we did together was to help the grandmother come to terms with that she indeed wanted to see her children and her grandchildren and be honest with them, and also go through their grief together rather than apart. And so we were successful in bringing the children together and making arranged visitations with the grandchildren. They all climbed in bed with her. They did activities together as they had in the past, and ultimately were able to express their love for each other and their sadness that she was not going to be with them as they grew up.
Oh, Kim, what an extraordinary example of your work. You can't see me, but I'm actually smiling because it just resonated with me. You know, there's so many challenges that we have to overcome. And in general, you know, we're seeing that things are changing in the hospice world. And I think one of the things that you just illustrated was the power of in-person family meetings, something that you and your team, you know, you do this on a daily basis. How else do you think that hospice in general, you know, is changing?
Well, I think we are one of the few medical providers that are cohesive and integrating disciplines. I think we're one of the few that come into people's homes and serve them where they need us the most. And of recent years, we've included nurse practitioners into the clinical team. And that expertise of symptom management of complex diseases right in the home has really helped.
So you just touched on something I think that's incredibly important, and that's that symptom management piece. You know, the whole philosophy of hospice is that we are unable to cure an illness, but we certainly can manage symptoms. And I think, you know, our listeners have heard me say on this program many times, can't undo the death experience. In fact, quite the opposite. What happens in those last weeks and hours and, you know, at the moment when someone passes away is indelible. there's no doing it over. So I think, you know, ensuring that we're adhering to the tenets of hospice and making sure that the thing that we do best, which is symptom management, and symptoms come in a lot of different forms. I think you talked about it. You know, grief is a symptom. Anticipatory grief is a symptom. Spiritual pain is a symptom. It's not just about the physical issues that, you know, that we've elucidated. So I'm looking at our time, and we've got about 2 minutes left. I would love for you to talk about upcoming veterans activities that Hospice of Orange and Sullivan is involved in, because you are the team leader.
Yes, I am. And yep, we have a lot going on for our veterans this spring. In February, the 11th through 17th is entitled the National Salute to Veteran Patients Week. And so our veteran committee is sending out packages to over 200 veterans within our community who have nothing to do with hospice. Mostly we want to extend to them and let them know we're thinking about them and wishing them goodwill. In February 29th, we are gathering together Vietnam Veteran War Era people into Stewart campus, and we are building veteran beads that will be distributed from veterans to veterans of the Vietnam era. And lastly, in March, we have a Welcome Home Vietnam Veteran Ceremony. This is a national holiday that our agency participates and hosts a commemorative ceremony. And we hope that people come.
Well, we had quite the showing last year, and I am confident that, you know, we will build on that this year. So, Kim, thank you so much for being my guest today. I need you to come back in March, because you and I have a lot to talk about. HospiceOfOrange.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.